Chris Black and Adam Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Welcome in to Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. I'm Chris Black with Adam Abdallah. Looking back at Wild Card Saturday night, the Texans and the Titans move on, and we have two Wild Card games today. The Vikings and the Saints at noon, Seahawks and Eagles at 3:40. We'll take your football calls at 312-332-3776. And looking back at last night, Deshaun Watson was outstanding in the second half and in overtime. And really, after the first half where he was terrible, carries the Texans on his back to the next round. And when we look at what we saw with the Tennessee Titans, they ran the football really well. And who knows if this is going to be the last game for Tom Brady with the Patriots and maybe his last game in the NFL period.
Watson went 13 of 14 for 193 yards and two touchdowns, one passing, one on the ground after falling behind 16-0. But not only was that impressive, Chris, it was a 7 of 8 for 142 yards when under duress. So it was proven yesterday. I know that the Bears aren't in the playoffs, and we are talking and recapping Wild Card Weekend without the Bears in it this year. But a lot of ties to Chicago as you look at what Deshaun Watson was able to do with the poor offensive line and what he was able to do on the ground himself and bring his team back, championship pedigree that he has. And then in the other game, what could be the last game of Tom Brady's career as a Patriot, and one of the places that is set up perfect for him to come, and it might just be us creating the narrative, is here in Chicago with the great defense, with better weapons that he had in Foxborough, and coming here and trying to, you know, get a couple more rings before he hangs it up in a couple years.
Tom Brady, after the game, talks about his future in the NFL.
Again, I don't want to get too much into the future and stuff. I mean, this team has fought hard. We battled every day. We tried to get better. We worked hard to improve. You know, I was proud to be a part of this team, not only this year, but every year. Again, I just don't know what's going to happen, and, you know, I'm not going to predict it, and no one needs to make choices at this point. You know, I love playing football. I love playing for this team. I love playing for this team for two decades and winning a lot of games. Again, I don't know what it looks like moving forward, so we'll just take it day by day.
Is there any possibility that you would retire?
I would say it's pretty unlikely, but hopefully unlikely.
So that's Tom Brady. Pretty unlikely, but who knows with Tom Brady. It sounds like he's a player that wants to continue playing. Here's Bill Belichick after the game when he was asked about Tom Brady leaving. Listen to this long, thought-out answer from Bill Belichick. Long, drawn-out answer.
As he usually is.
From the coach.
Bill, do you anticipate the Patriots will bring back Tom Brady for the 2020 season?
No, right now, we just finished the game, so we're focused on this game, okay? I mean, really?
There's Bill Belichick after the game. Obviously, doesn't want to talk about it. You know, if Tom Brady is an option for the Chicago Bears, I think it's unlikely just because, like, in his head, the benefit is what? They have a really good defense. Mm-hmm. The weapons, probably on offense, a little bit better than what he has in New England. Not a better offensive line, though. So when you kind of take everything into account, do you trust this Bears organization to set him up for success? I don't know if Tom Brady would have the trust in the organization here that he has in New England if they choose on to have him still and have him be their quarterback going into the future. It could be their choice to say, no, we want to move on. We want to go to someone else. You know, that certainly is possible with what Bill Belichick is putting together for the future of that team.
Well, I think what you have to look at is the one comparison you can make between the Patriots and the Bears is that both front offices are willing to go for it, right? The Patriots have been on the forefront of trading draft picks and acquiring players, and whether it works or not, you know, they gave up a draft pick for Mohamed Sanu earlier this year. And, you know, you look at what they've been able to do. They've tried. You know, they've tried to make up for the absence of Rob Gronkowski. They've tried to add guys to help Tom Brady. It just hasn't. Julian Edelman's like out there on one leg. You know, like he just might not have anything left. So they're trying to add things. And you look at what Ryan Pace and the Bears, they're willing to move up to get their guy. Now, moving, you know, getting Adam Shaheen, not the right move. Some of these guys that he's picked, not the right move. But ultimately, they try to go out and acquire the best talent, and they're willing to take risks to move up or to give up more than they need to try to get that kind of talent. So I think if he's worried about, you know, will the Bears make moves to try to add, Allen Robinson's better than anything he's got on the Patriots. You know? So he's already coming in to have better weapons than anything he's got on the Patriots.
I don't want to turn this into a sidebar debate, but I'm pretty sure some people would say Julian Edelman is a better wide receiver than Allen Robinson. Like, this is, we don't need to turn this into 5 good minutes on PTI and have a separate debate off of the
I
debate.
I think this is chicken
but,
egg.
But
chicken
Julian egg. Edelman is a really, really good wide receiver.
Is he a really good wide receiver because Tom Brady makes him a really good wide receiver and Allen Robinson has had to deal with Blake Bortles and Mitchell Trubisky? Which one is it?
Let's ask Mike in Hoffman Estates. He called 312-332-3776 talking football with us. Edelman or Robinson, Mike? Who's the better wide receiver?
I'm definitely going to give it to Edelman. I understand what you're saying. Allen Robinson has had some awful receivers, quarterbacks. But, I mean, give it to your man, Julian Edelman. He's won just a couple Super Bowls. And, I mean, he's been consistent for a very long time in his career. But he is getting up in age, so maybe that's another debate.
All right. Thank you for selling that. What did you call for?
I just wanted to call, really, like, I feel like there's not too many options. I mean, let's get it straight. There is a lot of options to do this offseason, but from a smart GM standpoint, I think you have to take your second round, draft a lineman, best available, hopefully someone from the Big Ten and the SEC and not some guy in the Pac-12 or some weaker division or conference. And, I mean, I feel like if you bring in a quarterback right now, those guys that you listed were a lot of there was a lot of success, well, middle-tier success in there, but I feel like if you bring any of those free agent quarterbacks in right now, without establishing an O-line, you have nothing. And, I mean, maybe another possibility is you trade both your second-rounders and you get a quarterback in the first round if you can sneak and get a late-round first pick or first-round pick. Don't think that's the idea either. But I think you have to establish your O-line, which I don't think is going to take one season, and you have to figure out if Matt Nagy is your guy or not next season, because I truly don't believe he is, because I think he's made a lot of errors that don't mean you're a first-year head coach. I think it means you're a bad coach. That's my opinion. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for your call, Mike. We appreciate it. 312-332-3776. Mike referenced the list of quarterbacks that we gave in our last 15 minutes of the last hour. So it's from Mike Florio this week on ProFootballTalk.com. He listed off all the different options. So if you're a Bears fan, you're sitting here today, you're trying to figure out how can this team get to the playoffs? How can this team win in the playoffs? The question we're asking you is, who should be the Bears' starting quarterback next season? The reason why it's open-ended right now and you can really think and let your imagine run wild is because, really, if Ryan Pace wants to be bold, the options are going to be there for the Bears to make a move to bring in someone who could be better than Mitch Trubisky. Some of the names that Mike Florio listed off: Tom Brady, Ryan Tannehill, Marcus Mariota, Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, Case Keenum, Drew Brees, Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis Winston, Blake Bortles, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Andy Dalton, Josh Rosen, Nick Foles, Joe Flacco, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Cam Newton. Those are the names he lists off on Pro Football Talk this week, that those are all possible names that could be moved this offseason in the NFL. So if you're a Bears fan, that's your shopping list. Who on that list do you think the Bears should have as their starting quarterback next season?
I mean, we did the should and would earlier too, and I think it will be, I think it still will be Trubisky, but you still have to go in and get someone. And the more you look at it, it seems like someone of the Marcus Mariota, maybe Cam Newton, depending on the money. Because I think everybody's saying Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton is under contract. You have to trade for him. So not only do you have to give up a draft pick, possibly, you also have to pay him $16 million, which is what he's due next season. So unless you sign him, you trade for him and then redo his contract, it's going to cost you twice. It's going to cost you a draft pick, which you don't have a lot of, and it's going to cost you, but that doesn't matter to Ryan Pace. He'll just take one for next year and the year
you
after.
You list that off, but as a Bears fan, it's going to cost you. What does that mean to me? I want this team to win.
Okay, but is Andy Dalton the answer to winning?
He's moved draft picks to get Khalil Mack, even though he didn't have a quarterback. So
okay, there's a difference between trading for Khalil Mack and trading for Andy Dalton.
Tell me the difference of moving up for Trubisky then.
There's no difference.
Okay, so like,
but you think the answer is Andy Dalton? The answer, according to the Bears, are in the playoffs.
You don't
think
Dalton would be a better quarterback than
Trubisky? That's not the answer.
That's the Bears answer. That's exactly the answer.
The Bears have a championship-level defense right now. They're top 10 in every metric that you measure, except for turnovers, because they regressed this year, or they didn't have the production that they did last year at turnovers. This is a championship-caliber defense that the Bears have right now. They need to be in the playoffs next season. They absolutely need to make the playoffs, because you're wasting a Khalil Mack window. You're wasting a window of having this core together. Now, you signed Eddie Jackson. Great job. Great pick, Ryan Pace. Gold star. But ultimately, does Andy Dalton put this team in the playoffs? Yes or no?
I would say yes.
Andy Dalton over the Packers, over the Vikings.
Adam, they were 8-8. You know how close that is to being a playoff team?
It's also really close the way their games went to being 6-10.
Give me two better games offensively, and this team's in the playoffs. How about this? Score on two more drives in the Rams game. You win that game, you probably get to the playoffs. Like, this team isn't that far off. I get it. People are going to point to tight ends, offensive line, play calling, all this stuff on the offense. If they're just a little bit better. We talked about this in the offseason. As long as the offense takes an improvement to middle of the pack, this team is a playoff team. We knew the regression defensively was coming. That was obvious. Just be a little bit better. Okay, can you be a little bit better on offense?
A little bit better is cool. You get into the playoffs. Now, can you put up 45 against the Saints? Whoa. Like the Vikings are going to have to today.
Okay. Don't you think that the way you play doesn't change? You wouldn't turn into an offensive team. You still try and play ball control.
That's why you brought in Matt Nagy, is to be an offensive team.
Well, listen, Abdallah. Clearly, to this point, he is not an offensive genius.
Well, he is when they play the Redskins.
They can spin it and sell it however they want. But this team being dead last in most categories in the National Football League offensively tells me that he is not a good offensive coach. Sorry, that's just...
That's why you brought him in.
You know why? Think of it this way. There are two coaches who have been fired, who were in their first and then in their second year, both offensive guys. One, I don't think anyone thought was an offensive genius, but he was an offensive coach who got a head coaching job. Freddie Kitchens, right?
Ugh.
What happened? Their offense was bad. He was fired. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's the other? He was talked about as an offensive genius.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Shurmur.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in year two with Pat Shurmur?
Out.
The offense didn't improve. Out. So guess what? Next season, if the offense doesn't improve, Matt Nagy's not going to be here.
Okay,
I don't care how many club dubs you got going over there, and all the BU and the boom and all the nonsense he brings to the table, and calling out the fan base for telling them that they don't cheer loud enough when we've been here our entire lives, but he's the outsider coming in here with his siren on second down noise and all this nonsense. How about you get some first downs and score some points? Because he's not going to be here if the offense is as bad as it was this year and what we saw last year. They just have to be a little bit better, and this team's a playoff team.
No, I get that. But if you need improvements on offense, you need to light it up. You need to be on par with the Saints, with the Chiefs. You need to be able to score 21 at will, okay? You need to be able to put up a bunch of points when you need to, and Andy Dalton's not going to do that.
The high-scoring team yesterday was 22 points, the Texans.
Okay,
the
Titans talk to scored me after 20. Today.
Well, I mean, yes, we'll see what the Saints do.
Okay, but the Saints are going to score. You have to face the Saints. To go to the Super Bowl, you have to go through the Saints.
You don't necessarily have to.
Okay, I get it, that it may shake out differently.
Like, you're painting it as the Bears have to score 50 to get to the Super Bowl. That's not realistic. What's realistic is, how about the offense just get a little bit better? Whether it be Trubisky, Nagy, play calling, running the football, the tight ends, the offensive line, bringing in Andy Dalton, signing Jameis Winston, having someone like Marcus Mariota beat out Trubisky in camp, signing Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, whatever your option is, how about the offense just be a little bit better? Because if they don't, guess what? Pace is probably gone. Nagy's probably gone. And then we look at Trubisky, and he's like, okay, you're under contract, fifth year option. He's a backup. What do we do here? But the front office, you're in major, you have a major problem ahead if the offense doesn't improve. And it starts with a quarterback. Every offense across the National Football League, we look at the stats and we look at the metrics and we give credit to the quarterback. So why shouldn't, if you want an improved offense, why shouldn't that be the spot we target this offseason?
It should be, but it shouldn't be Andy Dalton. It shouldn't be. I don't want garbage sale quarterbacks.
Well, I mean,
or garage sale quarterbacks. I don't want that.
Listen,
I don't want to be driving around the suburbs, going to different garage sales and picking out Andy Dalton or Marcus Mariota or Cam Newton and trying to find a diamond in the rough that someone doesn't know that they have and then flipping it. I don't want that.
Okay.
Bring me greatness.
Okay, that's fair. You and I, we're both married. In my house, there's a lot of Bravo TV and HGTV that's aired.
Mm-hmm. Love me some.
You know, when you watch
flip or flop
so much sports, mm-hmm. you have to allow some off time to make peace in the household, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you do have the, and if you're familiar with Bravo, there's the show Million Dollar Listings, right? Like, there are those quarterbacks out there. It's the Breeze, Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. It's Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that if they are...
Well, one of them's available.
Right, and if they are available, like Million Dollar Listing might be your show. But unfortunately, Abdallah, Fixer Upper is what we're dealing with here. It's going to be the HGTV, Chip and Joanna Gaines, Fixer Upper. You're going to have the Daltons, the Jameis Winstons, the broke Blake Bortles, the Teddy Bridgewater, guys who are not solidified as stars in the league, who you're going to have to shine up no matter what you do here in the offseason. It's going to be a fixer-upper offseason for
the
Bears.
That's fine. You want to get deep? This is going to be a Windy City Rehab, right?
No.
And you know what happens on Windy City Rehab?
Yeah, didn't they,
cancel
that show?
You know why? Because she can't sell a house to save her damn life. She spends way too much money on it. Yeah. Nobody likes it, and she can't sell. Half the houses in Wicker Park can't be sold because she tries to flip them. Well, and then they canceled it because she can't get permits.
Well, I mean, and it's overpopulated now.
Yes.
And people are kind of moving to other places like Pilsen and different parts of the city.
I want Windy City Rehab, okay?
She also, from what I've heard on the streets, is that she makes quite a bit of a mess.
Oh, yeah.
And the ordinance in the neighborhoods are not too happy. Let's go to Clyde on the west side. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Clyde?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. If it were me, I would keep Trubisky. I would figure out a way to lose all the games. I'm a Clemson Tiger fan. I love me some Trevor Lawrence. He uses his arm. He uses his legs. I think Trevor Lawrence is the real deal. There's a reason why Deshaun Watson complimented him. I just like that guy, man. And I think he is going to outdo Joe Burrow at LSU. So let's lose all the games so we can draft Clemson superstar and the next Tom Brady and Trevor Lawrence. How about that?
Hey, Clyde, you know what happens with this, right? The Bears do actually try and tank for Trevor Lawrence, and then they pick second, and they miss out on the next greatest player of a generation.
We don't like that.
And Clyde's not the first one to bring this up, but Clyde, the problem is the Bears can't be that bad. With this defense, the Bears can't be that bad. Like, the worst the Bears, this is the floor. 8-8, 7-9, that's the floor for the Bears. They're never going to have the first pick with this defense.
Clyde, who would you go after if you're not tanking?
You know what? I don't know. I was thinking of that guy from Georgia, but I have written Kirby Smart a letter, and I told him that he needs to take a timeout for himself. You know, some of the coaches need to stop taking timeout to strategize under duress because Kirby Smart looked like he's about to blow up each time, and he doesn't need an offensive or defensive coordinator because he interferes. And I actually wrote him a letter when they lost to Alabama back-to-back. I was liking Jake Fromm. But it's something about him that reminds me of that guy from Georgia, that quarterback for the Detroit Lions. What is his name?
Stafford?
Matt Stafford.
Yeah. I was liking him, but he doesn't like to run. It seemed like he doesn't want to take the punishment. It appears as if he just doesn't want to get hit. And, you know, I really just focus on one person, Trevor Lawrence, so I really should have thought it. But I want to agree with you all earlier. When y'all said Teddy Bridgewater, you know, he's tough. He's a very, very high IQ profile quarterback. I do like Andy Dalton. I lived in Texas for a while. I saw Andy Dalton at Katy High School. It was difficult to defeat his high school, his alma mater. I think that the Bears have a team for which we just need a tough quarterback. Lastly, Deshaun Watson showed, according to what you all said, with a bad offense, he was sacked 7 times, but he didn't crumble. He willed them to win, and that's that type of quarterback that we need. And I'll hang up and listen.
Clyde, I have one more question for you. You said you wrote a letter to Kirby Smart. Did you see the Bulls game last night by chance?
I did not.
Okay. Could you write a letter to Jim Boylan about using timeouts early in the fourth quarter? Could you do that for us?
I'll do it tomorrow. I'll stop at the library. I assure you, I wrote several letters to our because, you know, I was a, you know, I'm a Georgia fan, like Roquan and Attorney Michelle and, you know, those type of guys.
Sick 'em.
And I've always wanted them to beat Alabama. So I will write the boys coach a letter. I'll do it.
Please. Thank you. Thank you, Clyde. Thank you for listening. Let's go to Billy in Hyde Park. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Billy?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. What's up?
Hey, man. You know what's going down there, man, the Chicago Bears, man. It's Nagy, man. He reminds me of my grandmother who used to nag me to death. He's no good for Trubisky.
Why is that?
The Bears have plenty of chances. He's giving them bad information and not using him to the best of his abilities. He has good feet. He doesn't have a bad arm, but he's being misdirected. And if I was him, this would continue on. I would request a trade or get rid of Nagy. That's my assumption. Me or Nagy. And guess what? With the way all these quarterbacks are coming out of college now, there's a whole lot of good quarterbacks getting ready to enter into the NFL. And guess what? The old way of quarterbacking, standing in the pocket, those days are done. You can't run. You can't do it all. You're out. And we're going to see a tremendous Super Bowl. And then you can figure it out from there. But at this point in time, you guys know, and I know, it's either Nagy or Trubisky, or actually, the whole lot of them. They got to go. Now, I'll leave it with you guys, Court, from here.
Thank you, Billy. We appreciate the phone call. 312-332-3776. Chris Black and Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. So we're watching Deshaun Watson doing great things yesterday for the Texans, bringing them back, escaping the pocket.
Second and six here. Watson, pressure off the edge. Watson survives it and then checks down to Jones. Jones inside the 40, inside the 30, inside the 20. Jones, Deshaun Watson, magical, 34 yards.
Texans go on to win. After the game, Watson on ESPN television with Lisa Saunders talking about why not be great, why not me.
How in the world did you escape that sack?
Man, just never quitting, honestly. I knew it was blitz zero. I checked the play. Kevin Johnson was here last year, so he knew the signal. Seen a bell. And I just told myself to stay up. I mean, it's do or die right now. And all the work I've been putting in the offseason, I just had to make a play. And I told the guys before the game, I said, I put a card in the locker. I said, let's be great today. So somebody had to be great. Why not me?
So that's Deshaun Watson. And as I watched him play and then hear him say that, all I could think about is now I know how Portland Trailblazers fans felt throughout the entire decade of the 90s watching the Bulls win championships with Michael Jordan.
All I could think of while watching that, and then his poise in the post game, and just we've seen multiple clips this year of him breaking down plays like really well for the media, and the media's like, oh my god, he breaks down plays. Every quarterback can do that, but he does it
can every quarterback do that?
But you know what it makes me think, Chris?
Can every quarterback do that?
It makes me think of how awesome it would be and how much I would love to if I could have dinner with one quarterback.
Okay.
I feel like Deshaun Watson would be the guy that I would want to have dinner with most.
Where would you guys go?
Where would we go?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd probably let him pick, because I don't know if he's been to Chicago for dinner. So I would probably lay out a few places for him. And I would, you know, like, does he like sushi? Does he like steak? Does he what does he want? I would probably find something. Does he want a Chicago style pizza? And I'd be like, hey, let's go for thin crust, because that's actually Chicago style pizza. And we get some thin crust probably.
Do you think he uses like OpenTable to make the reservations? And do you think his account on OpenTable actually has his name listed as the person making said reservation?
He would make the reservation under like maybe Rick Meyer, Cordell Stewart, one of those guys.
We're going to talk with Colin Wilson from the Action Network to get you ready for the gambling day of Wild Card Sunday coming up next, right? Rick Meyer, Cordell Stewart, really? You had to do the Trubisky joke there?
Was it funny?
Chris Black and Adam Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Chris Black and Adam Abdallah.
on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Welcome, Abdallah, here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah and at Chris Black. And thinking about Tom Brady and his possible last game last night with the New England Patriots, it really is crazy to think back. I mean, we're looking at 20 years of the Patriots being great with one quarterback, one head coach, and one organization that is always in the conversation for championships.
I can't believe it took me this long, and I know we're going to talk to Colin Wilson here about gambling, and it didn't dawn on me until I just thought of it to look. Where are the Tom Brady next team odds? And Chris, I have them.
See, there you go. And that's actually a perfect way to start this conversation with Colin Wilson from the Action Network. You can follow him on Twitter at _Colin1. And Colin, if you had to set odds or pick a favorite to where Tom Brady will play next season, what would you say after last night?
Well, it's interesting you guys found these odds. I haven't actually seen them yet. My two favorites would have been the Chargers and the Bucks. The Chargers is Philip Rivers heading out. They're going to have an opening there. You know, and that's pretty close to home for Tom Brady, you know, going back to California, even though, you know, really the San Francisco 49ers are more of the home cooking, the team that he grew up and loved. But they have a quarterback, so I would probably go with the Bucks and the Chargers. But I do wonder where they rank on that list because I have not seen the odds yet.
All right, let me put Colin on hold. Let's see if we can clear up his phone line real quickly.
Call him right back.
Yeah.
So I will give you the odds, and I'll tell him when he gets back on the line. So the Patriots right now are the favorite at +125. The Chargers are the next team at +250. The Colts are the next team at 3-1. Mm-hmm. The Raiders are then. So it's the Colts are 3-1. The Chargers are 2.5-1. Then the Raiders are 8-1. The Bears are 10-1. Retired is 10-1. Then you've got the Panthers at 15-1, the Bucks at 20-1, the Dolphins at 20-1, and then how about this one at 25-1? The Pittsburgh Steelers at 25-1.
So that's suggesting that Ben Roethlisberger retires.
Yeah.
And they have an open position. They still want to compete for championships and try and figure that out. You know, the other team that you didn't list off there that I've read that they've been rumored as a possibility is if Bruce Arians is done with Jameis Winston, if Tampa would be in play.
I said the Bucks. 20-1.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 20-1.
Clearly not listening.
20-1.
Let's see if Colin's phone is cleared up. Colin, so you're saying San Francisco or New England would be the options?
No. The options I would have bet on would be the Chargers and the Bucks.
So the Chargers are.
I have not seen this list, but that's definitely the two that I would go for.
Yeah, the Chargers are 2.5-1. They're right after the Patriots. The Patriots are +125. The Chargers are 2.5-1, and then the Bucks are towards the bottom at 20-1.
You know, it's interesting with that. I think a lot of people will bet on the Patriots one, just assuming that the Crafts are going to get it done and bring them back, and that Belichick's going to be there for them. But you know, at some point, you're going to cut ties, and I think emotionally, everybody's kind of done with the whole New England thing, and I think Tom still wants to play another 5 to 6 years, and he's not going to get a contract of that kind of length from the Crafts.
Colin Wilson from the Action Network joining Chris Buck and Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Before we go to the wild card games today, Colin, just your opinion. Who do you think the Bears should start as quarterback next season? Should they stick with Trubisky, or should they go out and try and find someone to bring in as competition or as the starter for next season?
It's really tough, you know, because I think it all depends on what Nagy, how he feels about Trubisky's growth as a quarterback, because you only go as far in this league as the good. As the excellence of your quarterback, and if he doesn't think that Trubisky can get him an NFC championship or a Super Bowl, then he's going to have to move on from that. And I guess it all depends on this draft class coming out. I know, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to Tua. I guess we'll find out tomorrow if he's coming out, how good this quarterback class is going to be. But then again, Trevor Lawrence is going to be available the following year. So I would probably hold on to Trubisky for at least another year. I don't see anything out there right now that would get you to the next level and get you to the Super Bowl that's available, and that includes Tom Brady. So I would probably hold on to Trubisky, see how he progresses for another 12 months, and then punt until next year.
So moving on to the wild card games today, is the most popular bet a two-team teaser with the Saints and the Eagles?
Absolutely. Like I took it first. I think when teasers were available last Monday, I took that. And now everybody in the world is on pushing the Saints down below 2 and, you know, getting the Eagles up above 7, which is it's an extremely sharp play. And there's a reason why it's tacked. It's -120 to -140 at certain books to do that, because you're getting a huge advantage to cross through 3-7, but now that it's so popular, you have to wonder where it's going to get busted today. And I know that if I had to take sides outright, it would definitely be Minnesota +8 and the and Philly right now on the money line.
So when we look at the Vikings and the Saints, so how do the Vikings keep this game close, and how do they win this football game?
So, yeah, the Vikings actually are the one team in the playoffs that have faced a strength of offenses that is in the top 10, and they have a top 10 rank on Football Outsiders against the pass and against the rush. So, you know, I think if you throw out that blowout loss at home on Monday Night Football to Green Bay, and then the fact that they didn't play anybody, trying to get Cook healthy and trying to get everybody ready for the playoffs in the last week, this is a team that can play some extreme defense, and I think that they're going to be able to hang and put points up on the board, obviously, with this total. There's going to be some points up here on the board today. I think the Saints are a little bit overinflated. I know that our guy over at the Action Network, Sean Kerner, makes the game about 5.5, but like he said in an article, if, you know, if you hang a game at 5.5 with the Saints at home, the bookstores get pounded with Saints money, which is something they're not trying to, you know, have too much exposure on. So I like Minnesota here. I think they can hang and definitely keep it within the spread. Winning the game outright, I don't know. The officials, it's going to be a fascinating watch from how the Saints fans and the Saints organization feels about the NFL and the officials. But Minnesota has the defense to at least limit Alvin Kamara and keep Drew Brees from putting up too many points. I think Minnesota's going to cover today.
So Minnesota has the defense, like you mentioned, and the Saints are probably going to put up some points here. This total's at 50.5. It's gone way up. It's almost gone up 2 full points in the last couple days here. How do you see this total on the fast track in New Orleans?
Yeah, I actually had it on the under because I like what both defenses have been doing down the stretch, and I kind of throw out, you know, the Week 17 games, and then, you know, there were a couple of breaks in the Monday Night Football game for the Vikings, but these two defenses on paper should be able to keep a game underneath 50 points. I haven't invested in it myself. I think I'm just going to let the wave of over money hit and then possibly take a first half under as the two teams start to feel each other out.
So you feel confident that Kirk Cousins can figure this out and at least keep it close, because he's 0-10 against teams that finish with 10 or more wins. He's 2-10 against teams that ended up making the playoffs. And we know his record on prime time and in big spots, he usually has not played well at all. So you have faith in Kirk Cousins keeping things close today?
Well, keeping it within 8 is one thing. It's different than actually winning the game. How many times in those games was Kirk Cousins granted a point spread over over a touchdown? So,
right.
I feel comfortable with him as far as getting the points. But you're right, in the second half of these games, primetime night, standalone games where the entire nation is watching, he's kind of choked it away and not been able to get the job done. But I mean, when the spread is over a touchdown. It's not like the Saints have been world beaters. I mean, their loss to the Falcons is still a little bit, inexplicable. They struggled with a Panthers team that didn't have Ron Rivera down the stretch. So, I mean, they have holes, too, that can be exposed.
The second game is a lot closer as far as the spread goes. The Seahawks are 7-1 on the road this season. The Eagles have won their last 3 games. They've relied on a lot of magic just to get in to the playoffs. How do you see this game?
Yeah, I like the Eagles in this, and I took them at 2.5 earlier in the week, and I thought we would get a clean 3 as we got closer to kick. I thought a lot of people would have some parlays busted, or they would chase the game, and it would be on Seattle, but it looks like, the number keeps falling closer and closer to pick, and, you know, I know my analysis on the game was the fact that Seattle's offensive line was 24th in the league in adjusted sack rate, and that means that Russell Wilson's going to be on the run, but what else is new? He's always on the run, so you got to find a defense that's good in these two categories called stuff rate and second level yards. That's something on Football Outsiders that tracks what defenses can do. Can they make contact at the line of scrimmage or behind it? And what can they do with runners in between like the 5 and 10 yards that they gain? And, you know, amazingly enough, Philadelphia is actually top 5 in both those categories. So what that means is they're going to be able to contain and limit Russell Wilson in busted plays and in third downs and anytime he wants to leave the pocket and take off. Billy has a huge advantage in the numbers of limiting him what he wants to do.
Colin Wilson from the Action Network talking gambling with us, Chris Black and Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. When I watch Russell Wilson, is there anything to put behind the opinion stat-wise where, to me, he just seems like he is the best under pressure in the NFL at quarterback? Is there anything to kind of point to that he is actually playing at an above-average level when it comes to guys who are under pressure, clutch situations, and kind of leading their team to victory?
Yeah, there is an under pressure stat for the quarterbacks, what their performance rating is on first through third down and what they're under pressure. And Russell Wilson, and I didn't see those for this week, but I know Russell Wilson is always in the top five in those. He's just one of those quarterbacks that it doesn't matter if you have someone in his face or not, he can still complete a pass 30 yards down the field. So it's definitely, as a gambler, it's definitely something you worry about every time you go against the Seahawks. But, you have to trust in a defense that can control him and try to contain him and keep him in a pocket, whether he's got pressure or not. You got to be able to have good downfield coverage. And this is going to be an interesting game because I would think the entire world would be on Seattle. And interesting enough, there's enough money on Philly that it's moving the other way.
As far as next week game goes, the Titans are a 9.5-point dog against the Ravens. The Texans are a 9-point dog against the Chiefs. Is there anything on the line or the total that bettors can get in early while there's still some value?
I did like the over in the Titans and Ravens, and the reason is because the Ravens run a 21 formation where they have two running backs in the backfield, and Lamar Jackson can really pivot from under center and hit either one of those and take off. And the Titans are the worst in the league at defending 21 formation. The Patriots were in 11. The Titans are great at defending 11 formations, which is one running back, one tight end. But when they see 21, people have just torn the Titans apart. So I think the Ravens are going to be able to score a lot of points. But if you look on the flip side of the ball, the Ravens have actually played the 30th ranked strength of offenses. They're not very good against the rush or 20th against the rush. Derrick Henry should just eat all day. Titans are going to be able to control clock. They're going to be able to control how much time of possession. And that sets up the play-action pass. And Baltimore actually ranks in the bottom half of the league against play-action pass. So I think both teams are going to have an absolute a way to score points fast because neither of them can defend what the other one does.
Colin, when you look at heading into the playoffs, was there a team that you put a futures bet on to win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I did take the Chiefs before it got under 5-1, mostly because of their defense. They were playing the most outstanding defense of anybody down the stretch, especially in the red zone. They were locking up. Look at some Chiefs scores as of late. They've actually been a lot lower scoring. And, offensive-wise, I do have some concerns about Mahomes in the red zone. The Chiefs had, I think, a bottom-five red zone efficiency rank in the last 6 weeks of the season. But defensively, they have really kept teams on the sidelines and shut them down from scoring points. So defense always wins for me in January in the playoffs, and that's why I took a future out of the Chiefs.
You joined us throughout the college football season on Chicago's College Tailgate. Any thoughts on the national championship game between Clemson and LSU? I feel like everybody kind of jumped on this line early, and then it's kind of remained the same. It's right around 6 right now. But then once the hype train starts here, now that we're a week out, everybody kind of jumps back on a side. How do you see this one?
Yeah, I've got money down on Clemson, and I've got futures on Clemson, and I'm not going to back off of them. I've done plenty of research. I'll have an article out at Action Network this week going into full detail about why I think Clemson can not only cover, but why I think they can win. And really, it comes down to, at a high level, LSU does not have a lot of different variations in pre-snap formations and motion, and that's going to help Isaiah Simmons, who's technically called a linebacker for Clemson, but he can play on the defensive line, he can play in the secondary, he can play everywhere. But if Clemson's able to detect what the play is going to be pre-snap, then that's going to help them get their guys in place. And Clemson's one of the best teams in the country in rushing just four guys, which is going to allow them to drop 7 all the time. This will be the best defense that Joe Burrow sees. I'm not saying they're going to stop Joe Burrow. I'm not saying there's not going to be points. But I will definitely take Clemson and the points, considering that I think LSU tips their hand on what play that they're going to run. The fact is, just nobody's been able to stop it. And Clemson is athletic enough to actually stop a few of their wide receivers. So look for the article out on Action Network. It's going to be detailed with both sides of the ball and stuff like that. But I'm definitely sticking with Clemson here.
Thank you, Colin. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
That's Colin Wilson from the Action Network. He's great on gambling, especially with the NFL and college football. You can follow him on Twitter @_Colin1. And I kind of agree with Colin. I know we're still a week away from the national championship game, which let's not get started on that. It's the most ridiculous thing ever that the national championship game isn't tomorrow.
Yeah.
They've already had a week in between.
Well, I mean, listen,
you don't need 2 weeks off. Come on, the college football season's over. Let's play the game already.
The Bachelor's on ABC tomorrow, so you got to have a week of The Bachelor, and then you go to, and then you have a you have the national championship game.
But I agree with Colin. I like Clemson in the national championship game. I'm with him on that.
I think, and it may be just recency bias, I think I would take Clemson with the points now that it's at 6.
Yeah.
But I still think that I haven't seen anybody be able to stop LSU. Now, there are times where they can't stop anybody as well, but the way their defense has played as of late, I'm not talking about earlier when they gave up a bunch of points to Alabama, and Alabama came all the way back and lost that game by 5. But ultimately, LSU is playing. I haven't seen anyone stop them, so until I do, I'm still going to ride with them. Now, it's minus 220 on the money line, but spread, at this point, I might have to go Clemson, but I still think LSU finds a way to win this game.
Trevor Lawrence is the better quarterback, right?
Trevor Lawrence might be the better quarterback, but does LSU and Joe Burrow have better weapons around him?
I like how you answered my question with a question. Very well done there.
Thank you.
Yes, and it's Adam Abdallah, Chris Black here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Coming up next, there was a play yesterday in the wild card games that reminded me of something with the Chicago Bears from 2006. What could that be? We'll tell you about it next.
Chris Black and Adam Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Chris Black and Adam Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. In 10 minutes, we will talk about Deshaun Watson, the Chicago Bears, the mistake that was made. 2017 draft day. Trubisky versus Watson. Look how happy Abdallah is that we're going to talk more Deshaun Watson coming up next.
I love talking about Deshaun Watson. I wish we talked about him every day in Chicago. It'd be a lot cooler.
I mean, watching the games yesterday, it's just amazing how you watch him play and how good he is. And it's just like, how could someone miss on this? It's unbelievable. But also, something I saw yesterday, Abdallah. Mm-hmm, did you see after halftime, the opening kickoff, where DeAndre Carter took the kickoff, he received it, mm-hmm. and then dropped the football in the end zone, and then here come the Buffalo Bills, and the official didn't blow the play dead after he tossed the football to the ground, so the Bills cover the football in the end zone, and it looks like Buffalo now just started the half with a touchdown to what, go up to like 19-0? Yeah, is that what
seems,
it would have been?
It seems like the officials bailed them out, but yeah, he didn't take a knee. And he tossed the football to the ref. The ref didn't pick it up. And then there's no whistles.
Yeah, nothing's happening.
Then the Bills come down and score.
And the Bills score a touchdown, right? Yeah. And then so they review it. And the intent is that he gave himself up. Therefore, the Texans don't turn the ball over there. I'm sure some people want to argue the semantics over how that took place. Mm-hmm. But let's be real. If we're looking at it logically, he wasn't trying. Like, it's obvious that he gave himself up, right?
Yeah.
It did remind me of this, though. If we go back to 2006, November 12th, the Bears are playing at New York, the Giants, and there was a missed field goal attempt by the Giants, and then this happened.
It's going to be a 52-yard attempt into the notorious swirling winds of Giants Stadium. If he misses it, the Bears will get the ball at their own 42. Eagles to put it down. Feely's kick. Pressure kick, not even close. And now Hester, after hesitating, he's going to run it out. And Hester is going to run it out past the 40 in the Giants territory. He is going to go all the way. Touchdown, Chicago. And no flags. There he is, nothing. A little fake. And the next thing you know, it's a play that equals the longest play in the history of the National Football League.
Heck of a block.
Great block. Down the sideline he goes on a missed 52-yard attempt.
Did you think that he made that first move on purpose? I mean, that he was trying to draw him, lull him to sleep?
You know, you don't know with him.
This kid
was a phenomenal run back guy in college. One of the reasons they drafted him. He's run back two punts, 80 or more yards. He's also fumbled some kicks. But right now he has turned this into an 11-point advantage.
All right, so that's Al Michaels and John Madden, which one, when I watched the highlight last night, I was like, oh, we got to get this in because John Madden's awesome, the all-time best.
Yeah.
But then remember, it was Devin Hester kind of like walking with the football like he wasn't going to do anything. And then took
off. Yeah.
And he went all the way up the right sideline for the touchdown. It came to mind because, like, when you see the Texans returner, DeAndre Carter, just kind of stand there, do nothing, and then drop the football. It's like, well, I mean, kind of like you're trying to catch them off guard. And what if, and that's why you finish each and every play. You know, it's like, it's also like later in the game when Josh Allen is running wild and he just throws the ball over his shoulder. Like, what was he doing? Like, somehow the Bills got out of that mess, but it's just funny that you watch it and you play the play out till completion.
Don't
just drop the ball.
During those years, there was nothing more exciting than watching Devin Hester return anything. It was awesome. And, like, you anticipated it. You're like, I can't. Because you and I were at a game once. Or, no, that was Nathan Vasher's return. But, we would go to games and be like, I got to get there for the start of the game because if I don't, I'm going to miss a touchdown.
Well, it's, you know, in 2006, early in Hester's career, you hear Al Michaels on the call say, like, oh, he's known as a return guy. He's had a couple where he's dropped the ball. Like back then, you weren't sure that he was going to be the greatest returner of all time. That's Adam Abdallah. I'm Chris Black. We talk football with you next.
Chris Black and Adam Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.